Welcome to the Week in Sports Cars and the Marshall Pruitt Podcast, presented by Cooper Tires and also presented by DailySportsCar.com's awesome editor-in-chief, editor, reporter, man about town, man about the globe. That being... This is where you're supposed to speak, man!
I'm sorry, man. I thought you were going to say Graham Gubb, and I was going to respond. I can't get this right, can I? Good morning from Shanghai, in China. It does feel a little bit like Groundhog Day here. Been here now for something over a week, obviously, for the FIWC, and now revving up to TV duties and reporting duties for Daily Sports Car at the season opener for the Asian Le Mans Series, where we've had the entry published this morning.
Brilliant. So we'll start with that in just a moment. We're going to do something a little bit different this week, dear listeners. We're recording this what would be Friday morning for Graham, and what is actually almost 5 p.m. Thursday in the U.S. for me on Thanksgiving. And I can tell you, having seen the daggers stared at me for coming in to the office on a national holiday, in the interest of maintaining my status as a human being that is alive, we're going to do something a little bit different this week. Plus the fact that we're recording much later in the week than expected due to a lot of severe technological issues that Graham has been dealing with on his end. We're going to do something a little bit different. We are going to just have about a half hour conversation about some of the most interesting themes that have popped up since we recorded last. And since we already have six pages of questions that have come in on IMSA, WEC, you name it, what we're going to do is hold on to those. We're going to actually call for more going into next week and consolidate all of those into a crazy super long episode next week that encompasses all the ones from this and next week. So you're going to get about a half hour from us today. So we, at least on this end, we stay alive. And then next week, we're going to go hardcore with questions. So with all that said, Graham Goodwin, going into a professional race meet, it's only normal to get the entry list the morning of when practice is meant to kind of get kicking off or things happening in an official way, right?
Well, yes and no. I mean, there's all sorts of facts in play, but we've known for a little wee while that the entry for the Asian Le Mans Series is looking rather more healthy this year. I can tell you, MP, 27 cars on the list. 27 cars are present, but hearing right now that one of those 27 will magically transform into almost an Audi R8 into a Mercedes-AMG GT3. We had a bit of a problem yesterday for one of the cars. We'll come back to that in just a short moment or two. But 27 car entry marks a massive turnaround for the Asian Le Mans Series, which was struggling at times to better a dozen, 13 cars last year. Better still, it's a really high quality entry. We've got really big name teams and drivers in every class. The entry it's still got one or two TBAs to be filled out this morning, but there's some names that, you know, wherever you are in the world listening to the Week in Sports Cars, you'll recognize them. And, you know, we'll take you through three of those, three world champions, two of them reigning world champions, James Calado and Alessandro Pier Guidi, Le Mans winners. We've got Dries Van Ter from Erlen GTM as part of the Tianchi Racing team, which should have two Audis. One of those had a problem in testing yesterday with a bit of a conflagration, and that is going to be replaced by Mercedes. Trying to find out what's going to happen, which car Dries is actually eventually going to appear in. Rob Hough, 2012 WTCC champion, is here, doing double duty with the Chinese Touring Car Championship and again with a Tianchi Racing car. We've got United Autosports, a gaggle of European Le Mans Series talent with Inter Europol, race winners last time out at Portimao, the Akurikos Nielsen Racing team, who've won races in Michelin Le Mans Cup and podiumed in ELMS as well. It genuinely is a very attractive looking grid indeed down there, and I can't tell you how much I'm looking forward to calling it.
Well, I love it, I guess. But again, the the transformation of one entry, I guess it's still under the same German flag, just a different brand.
Oh, yeah.
Interesting. We also have not only the WEC race, which just the wet WEC race just went down, and good Lord, never have I been happier to not cover a race halfway around the world that seemed like you were just in a swimming pool the entire time. We have 24 hours of COTA. We have all kinds of good stuff. So where should we go here, Graham? Because what we're trying to not do is talk about things that folks have sent in specific questions about, but there's a lot going on. So where should we venture to first on the fun conversational bits?
Well, let's start off with WEC, and I'm going to give you a little bit of a teaser. We do one of the things that we do try to cover on Weekend Sports Cars is car, hypercar. I'm just going to say this. Plug your seatbelts in. There is news coming. It is huge. And I don't underestimate my words on that one. Massive for that formula. Anybody that is actually not on board with this being a very good news piece for the sports car world, you're going to be proven wrong. There is massive, massive news coming, and not just one bit of massive news, but several bits of massive news. So leave that with us for a few days. There's some calls to be made this week and next week, but suffice to say that from being, I think it's fair to say, marginally concerned about the future there, maybe not in year one of that formula, but year two and onwards, I think we're looking at something, I'm choosing my words really carefully here, truly transformational for what effectively is the current LMP1 class. That's enough about that for now. It is mouth-watering stuff. I know that's a phrase I use very often, but it's mouth-watering stuff.
You're a pervert, and those, so we expect that, but yes.
Yeah, but a few people that I've shared what I now know, not believe I know, but know, have expressed this in terms of, my God, that is the biggest thing in sports car racing in my lifetime. And these people, by the way, were not 3 years old. So, you know, this is... So either way, I'm just going to drop that in as a little bit of a treat on your Thanksgiving Day across there in the States, that there is really good stuff coming. I'm not quite sure exactly what parts of that I can share with the wider world and when we can do that, but I'm hoping that some of that we can actually get out there by the time we speak again next week. For WEC, though, and you're absolutely right, it was wet. For all the days we were here up to the race, bar the day before, it was just torrential rain, and the race itself, again, race control did a fantastic job of actually getting as much racing as we did. I think lessons were certainly learned. We knew there were some issues about some parts of drainage here at the SAIC Shanghai International Circuit. We equally knew that it drained pretty well elsewhere, but Eduardo Freitas and the crew came up with a great process of getting the cars back moving under behind a safety car before they release them to green. So let's just wait and see whether or not lessons are learned moving forward from there. So certainly one of the lessons that was learned, we're not going to 6-hour race here next year. It's a 4-hour race. We won't be going into darkness. That was a big mistake. It was just way, way too dark and too wet. And certainly talking to some of the more experienced drivers, MP, Ollie Gavin, for instance, post-race, making the point that had he gone off, he wouldn't have known which way to come back to get back on again. It was pitch black out there and pretty treacherous. So made for a tough race to call, made for a tough race to manage. I made for a very, very tough race to actually race on, but we got some racing, and I think finally we started to see some green shoots of recovery into the mix that is LMP1. The EOT still is not perfect, but it's a damn sight better than it's been. In qualifying, second fastest car was the Rebellion in the hands of Andre Lotterer. That means that his lap was quicker than three of the qualifying drivers in the Toyotas. So lots going on, a lot of it positive, heading in the right direction, but pretty clearly, you know, we're now more than halfway through the season.
So let me just mention quickly, you're still hearing a little bit of the technology issue. 4G? No. 3G? No. 2G,
no.
That'd be a dream. We're fluttering in 1G for GG, unfortunately, as you hear. Fortunately, it's just brief dropouts on occasion, but This is actually the vast improvement that Graham has come up with. So that's also a reason to hold off on a long form episode here with all kinds of questions, just because, again, good on our man, though. And I'll just make on Wednesday. And
yep.
We kept trying, kept looking for ways, and your persistence is greatly appreciated here. Let me play a little bit of interviewing my co-host and friend, just because I wasn't at WEC World last weekend.
Sure.
Of the topics we have covered, I would say weekly, on the Week in Sports Cars for a long time, maybe pretty close to the beginning of this earlier in the year, it was, hey, car, hypercar, great, sounds great. Meh, doesn't sound like a lot of traction in reality is happening. We hear words, platitudes, oh, it could be interesting, we'll explore, if it meets our corporate objectives, we'll participate. Just again, a lot of general, we're not going to poop on it as manufacturers, but by and large, I think we've all anticipated Toyota would be in. No, you know, anybody yep. could write that, and it's, you know, that's pretty much a known thing. But for the most part, there hasn't been much to follow it. You had a great piece with Jim Glickenhaus recently where he confirmed we'll be in. So, okay, that's a big auto manufacturer yep. and now a small boutique manufacturer. But it just seemed that there was this huge, huge separation between, call it car worlds, Toyota, Glickenhaus, SCG, and not much meat in the middle, which has been the worrying part all along, without obviously getting into names and other things that you're holding and you'll be revealing soon. Just give me a general sense of paddock feeling among either existing manufacturers, existing teams. What was the tenor like last weekend in this concept maybe becoming a bit more solid than we've seen?
I think the issue here is it's a combination of some people that we've already got in this paddock and some people that we don't. The one thing I would make clear, because I know that at times, and you know, rightly so, in part degree of cynicism about these kind of stories, jam tomorrow, you know, none of these stories, and it's stories multiple, by the way, have come from sources within the rule makers. Not a single one. Every single one of them has come from within the family that exists in the paddock rather than the offices that overlook the paddock. So what you've got is a combination of people involved currently in sports car racing and a combination of others that aren't directly involved in this part of the sport right now. But in terms of what the teams, I think teams and manufacturers, everybody just wants to see a bit more clarity. They want those rules. We'll be getting those final rules in the first week of December, but everybody wants those final rules to make some final judgments about not necessarily whether or not those manufacturers will come to play. I think those decisions for the most part have more or less already been taken, but whether or not some of the smaller organizations might be going more seriously to go and talk to some more of the minnows to see whether or not there might be deals there, badging deals, you know, these are the kind of things which I think are going to boost numbers. In terms of numbers, I would expect today, it's a really good question. At this point, in terms of what I know, I would be extremely surprised that if in year two of Car, we weren't talking significantly into double figures in that class of manufacturer entries. Significantly numbers. That's numbers of cars, not 10 manufacturers, but significant numbers of cars, well over 10. In the new hypercar class from 2021-22 onwards.
And that, if we look back historically at what we would say the most recent car formula happened to be in the mid to late 90s, yeah, it's not too far, right? If we think about, okay, a handful of Mercedes, a handful of the, you know, the 10, if we're talking 10 to 12, I think we're looking at a number that is incredibly healthy, and the diversity. That's the thing that I'm hoping for most, knowing that, again, we've got one major, one boutique. If it's all majors, that'd be great. From a high-profile standpoint, they'll spend a ton of money with the ACO and the WEC, But I would like to see some more challenger brands, some of not necessarily tiny SCG level, but just some that, you know, are in that frame where you go, cool, we've got a proper David versus Goliath dynamic we can root for, not just a bunch of big heavyweights and then a couple of, you know, token participants, which we're going to cheer for. But, you know, the Donkervorts of the world are never going to do much.
As we've said before, not just the Donkervorts of the world, but the TVRs of this world, you know, the Paganis of this world, the Koenigseggs, they're not, by the way, the ones I'm kind of keeping covered up here. The ones I'm keeping covered up here are proper mainstream brands. The issue here is, I guess, if you start to see those mainstream brands coming up, then that actually does encourage other people to come forward and say, wouldn't it be cool if we beat insert name of major international brand? And I think, you know, that's not just the allure of taking a Le Mans 24 Hours win, it's the allure of beating the established players. And I think that will come, and it'll probably come in, you know, there's been a lot of talk, we've talked about it, MP, there's been a lot of talk about how similar this concept is to DPI in very many ways. I think it's at that level that you will see similarities. That's where the chassis manufacturers, the you know, the Oricas of this world, the Ligiers of this world, you know, the Multimatics of this world, potentially come forward and make those alliances with smaller manufacturers, whether or not it's a badging thing. You know, that, for instance, let's say, for instance, a team like, well, Sydney Alpine, why wouldn't they actually badge an LMP1 as an Alpine and then look for their backing elsewhere? Badge it, use that as an opportunity to leverage the sponsorship. Why wouldn't Rebellion, who already have TVR on the car, be talking to the emerging TVR manufacturer to provide a substantial part of the backing that gets them into the window that they need to go and get the other commercial backing to make that a reality? I think, honestly, that's the jam on the cake. That's what that is. That's the bonus that could come with this if they can make this fly. And every indication that I'm hearing, adopting a far from cynical view of this, is that that is absolutely now within reach. It's not a theory anymore. There are real world programs that are absolutely underway right now that have not yet been announced.
I love this. I love that this is becoming a thing, the thing we hoped it would become, not just a, well, all right, that kind of farted and died in the shadows here. It's actually a real thing. Let's talk a little bit about something that has led to a few interesting comments, a little bit on social media. I think I might have seen a headline somewhere, and that's all related to driver ratings, the thing we love almost as much as BOP. And I'll open this with a general thing to throw at you, Graham, and maybe you can cite a couple of the names that stand out to you, but it seems we're now fully entrenched in the annual tradition, late season, roughly end of November tradition of, hey, driver who was really happy because they were listed as a non-pro silver or bronze are now really grumpy and upset because they won a championship or did something that the FIA felt warranted a graduation to full pro gold or platinum level, and they're really upset and then say that this whole thing needs a rethink and I'm going to appeal and lobby for things to be changed. We could almost write, we could almost do a Mad Libs type fill in the blank that we just whip out that sheet every year around this time and fill in the driver's name, fill in the series that they're in, and just circle which rating they had and which rating they've been promoted to, and then the grievance is essentially the same. So I'm not saying this to make light of those drivers, it's actually the opposite. I feel like it's just become such an accepted thing each year that drivers' lives, ability to earn incomes, ability to keep a ride that they just had but can no longer because they have the wrong driver rating. It just feels like we're locked into this, I guess, maybe acceptance. Is there a way to push back and say, hey, this is garbage? Or is this just expect these kinds of complaints every year and we're stuck with it?
Well, To a degree, there's few surprises in that list. It is, we should remind listeners, it's a provisional ranking at the moment. There was the opportunity to appeal that ranking. But there is a pretty clear rule book about it. There's two or three things that now come into kind of sharp focus of those people directly involved. You're absolutely right. You've got drivers who have had success, and that's affected their ranking, and not in a positive way for their career. You've then got the second side, which is the promoter interest. And the principal one we've seen there, of course, is in IMSA, where IMSA have effectively decided that some of the rankings that are actually out there in the provisionals will be effectively ignored. That this is about them managing their GTD class to be a proper pro-am class. And you and I and a lot of the listeners have actually already commented on this one in questions down through the last year or so, around how that's affecting the real-world numbers that you've actually got in GTD. So, you know, rules are rules, but they're perfectly within their rights to manage their own products. This is something where we get a lot of spirited debate, isn't it? And a whole range of things, car, DPI, blah, blah, blah. But actually, driver rankings in GTD and GT3 and Pro-Am classes, WEC, IMSA, ELMS, etc., it's there all the time. It's absolutely within their rights to determine if we decide we're not going to allow this team to actually participate. Is that going to mean that we get those three, four, five teams to kind of come forward, or the potential for that to come forward? My view, rules are rules. Rules then tend to become theoretical when you're dealing with somebody else's rule book. There is nothing in the rule book that says that Championship A has to absolutely comply with the rule book by sanctioning body B if it's not a race series that sanctioning body is actually organising. We've seen it in British GT in the past, in the days of, you remember the GT Academy, silver rank drivers. You put two of those young men who were extremely capable together, and it becomes potentially a threat to the established order, and potentially you lose three, four, five, six cars in the GT3 class. So I think what we've got here is a bit of real world coming in for those individuals that are directly affected. I completely get it, and there's a level at which I don't disagree with you guys. It is totally and completely unfair, but then again, you're coming to play with somebody else's train sets, and they're perfectly within their rights to manage that.
Let me throw another angle at this, and maybe it's a positive, an alternative positive. So we've seen in a few instances, I think Madison Snow, who just won the IMSA GTD Championship with Brian Sellers, the clear pro. Madison's now been bumped up to pro level in this provisional driver ratings publication. We've seen some drivers lose their rides as a result of being bumped up or not being able to get classified downwards. We've also seen, okay, if that ends up being reality, and say Madison, for example, can no longer continue with the Paul Miller Racing team as a result of a conflict there, what opportunities might he have? We know if we're just talking domestic championship, there aren't a lot of seats left in GTD for a pro grade driver. But we've seen in some instances, Graham, and maybe you can tell me more for what you've seen in the escalation of the Asian Le Mans series as a thing and becoming more successful, even last weekend's 24 Hours of COTA and such. We're seeing some other opportunities, though. Maybe it's not full season like the recently uprated drivers would like, but we've seen some opportunities where ultimately we're talking about employment, the ability to earn a living and keep doing the thing they love as a now, quote, professional race car driver. But there seem to be some other side avenues that could be pursued, even if a full season championship is maybe no longer that much of an option at present, to go and play in some other endurance racing style endeavors. Do you think that's maybe just more of a popular route that will continue to happen as folks? We saw some names at COTA, for example. You're like, oh, we see some names, at Shanghai, where it's like, wow, okay,
Absolutely.
there's some heavy hitters that maybe we wouldn't have seen a couple of years ago. Do you think these one-offs or these limited opportunities on a more global scale for newly pro drivers might be an acceptable workaround for them?
Well, I don't think it's even just newly pro drivers. The reality is the pro-am world giveth and the pro-am world taketh away. And it is that awful cusp, that realization for particularly younger drivers, though, coming through and up in the ranks, that leap from silver to gold effectively means for most of these guys the difference between being paid and having to find someone to pay for you, you know, of having to find the money to pay for it yourself, rather. And that's a massive, massive leap when you're talking about the figures that we're talking in international racing. It is major six-figure sums that are going to be required. That's where you get these drivers that are newly promoted to gold being really quite upset by it, because it is a stumbling block. That said, should be said that it's my view that that should have been anticipated. I know that's a very glib and easy thing to say, but should have been anticipated, and that has to be part of the career plan. For me, in terms of the drivers that I talk to on a literally on a daily basis on the back of the driver rankings, have spoken to a number of drivers, both, you know, buoyed up and indeed concerned by what that means for their careers, there are opportunities. There's a number of people active now in LMP3 and in GT4 on both sides of the pond, MP, that are doing that now with drivers that they're bringing through the ranks with them as part of that career structure. And that is a newer part, if you like, of the picture here. It's been with us for a decade or so. It's a great example of it here in a completely different sense of the business. We've got an Aston Martin here, which is entered by TF Sports in Shanghai. Johnny Molum, a driver who is working his way down through the rankings.
Hold on. How could Johnny Molum be competing in a motor race when he's retired?
And I've asked him this, and there's a gesture he keeps saying to me when I say this. Now, it involves a single finger.
Okay.
I think he's waving, but he's not doing it properly.
And tell that Pruitt guy to bugger off, I think, is also the other phrase that he mentions somewhat frequently.
But Johnny has joined forces with TF Sport here with his Red River Sport consultancy with a couple of his clients, Bon Grimes and Ivor Dunbar. Ivor not here, Ivor at home, and I hope he is listening because his wife is, some difficulties at the moment medically, so that's being sorted, and Ivor's at home playing quite correctly the husbandly role. But that's another example of what a professional driver, in this instance a very, very experienced professional driver, can do when he realises, as Johnny correctly did realise, that his value in the marketplace to professional teams is beginning to be waning, is to find another way forward with that career. And, you know, we'd take the mickey out of Johnny, but hats off to Johnny Molum.
Oh, we love the guy.
Yeah, but staying a professional driver for as long as he has by just working with the marketplace, and there's a lesson there for very many of these guys that are now beginning to struggle, because actually the answer for most of them is much the same. You've just got to find a way to work within the structure that is part of your sport. Putting to one side for a moment, that structure needs a bit of reform. I think it does. Reality is the rules are not going to change anytime immediately soon. I do feel for young drivers that find themselves with a mountain to climb, having been asked to find maybe a smaller amount of money or indeed no money, and all of a sudden being asked to find all of it. That is a huge bridge to cross. But the businessman realist in me says, guys, you should have been anticipating that and expecting that. And you certainly should not have been putting all your eggs into the basket that says I might luck in and stay the ranking that's going to keep me employed. That's not the way the world works.
Well, it's not the way this bizarrely crafted world works in endurance racing with driver ratings. Elsewhere, you simply have those who are excellent and those who are less excellent.
Absolutely.
And they commingle. It's funny, and maybe this will be a topic for another day where we just go a little bit deeper into the thought process and reasonings behind driver ratings. Ultimately, as I see it, it's about commerce. It's about making sure that funded drivers are able to participate in the sport, gentlewomen drivers, and in a, quote, pro-am mandated class, that factories do not simply, in a subversive manner, fund pros, all pros, to be in the cars. So, again, I get it, but maybe we'll delve into this a little bit deeper. Got about a minute or so left, mate, in our just informal talk about things that we find interesting. What should we be looking for this weekend with the Asian Le Mans Series round at Shanghai? And where can folks follow with you you speaking words into microphones and other folks that might want to follow along and see what's happening?
Well, thanks very much for that. Yes, you can. You'll be able to watch it on a range of broadcast stations. I'll make sure that we post with the news about what's going to happen for next week's TWSC on all the social media that we have following us for Weekend Sports Cars. But YouTube will have full live coverage of the Asian Le Mans Series pre-show, qualifying and race, by the way, pre-show, and the full 4 hours of action. We're expecting it to be a dry race. It'll be a fast race, really excellent mixed grid. As I said, more or less every car in the field has a championship winning driver aboard that car, so I'm expecting it to be a cracking race with my co-host Jivan Sulvanad and the lovely Nadia Nash down in pit lane. I'm really looking forward to it. I have to say, I'm looking forward to this race probably more than I have for several recent months. It's a fun atmosphere in this paddock. It is coming together. YouTube would be my favoured option for you guys, and we will, as we always try to, if we can get that connectivity up and running, you know, you can talk to us in the booth via social media, and we'll try to kind of get a few questions answered about anything you want to know about the emerging world of the Asian Le Mans Series 2018-19.
I am preparing a tweet right now that says, pull down your pants, Goodwin. So we'll see if that gets through into the booth. Mate, seriously, thank you for pushing and pushing and pushing to come up with, no joke, a 1G solution here. And with the half hour that we've put together, hopefully it was entertaining or informational or I don't know what, but we will be back to our usual format next week when A, it's not a holiday here, and B, Graham actually has something other than flip phone grade telecommunication options once he gets back to the UK. So for Graham Goodwin and also for our friends at Cooper Tires who make this possible, thank you for listening to a rather abbreviated edition of the Weekend Sports Cars, and we will speak to you in much longer form next week.